Off the Ball, GAA.
David Clifford is obviously on a different planet. Like, I actually think it's ridiculous that me and him both won the same award. Like, it's ridiculous. he's on a different level.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Very welcome to Off the Ball Breakfast on this Tuesday morning, the other side, the bad side of the bank holiday weekend. Production-wise, he's moving too fast for the industry to keep up with. Bear that in mind what I just said there. Given that it's well and truly musical festival season, it's wonderful to have him back in studio. It's Arthur Phil O'Diager. Rumours that she was scullying the pints this August bank holiday proved erroneous, of course. She was more so horsing around. Delighted to have Megan back.
Gurmi and Mogget, delighted to be back. And I still have a voice, which actually we all have a voice, which I always think after bank holiday is a really good sign.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what kind of state this is going to be in, this whole thing this morning.
Yeah. But,
there's sound coming out of it, so that's good.
Because you were busy as well.
Yeah, very enjoyable time all together now in Waterford. What a festival.
Looked amazing. You look like you got the weather. Like, I don't know, like we had a storm in the west of Ireland.
I heard that, yeah. We escaped the best of it.
We did pretty bad. Like, it was howling. The windows were like rattling and it was just the rain. We got biblical rain on, was it Saturday? Yeah, Saturday night. It was just like a washout. So when you were trying to go from Cetorna to Tetorna for your scullying pints, it was, it was damp out there.
Yeah, yeah. No, we altogether now got away with it. There was drizzle on Saturday night. Jordan Seamat.
No.
Who I was unfamiliar with till the weekend just gone.
And it's so rage now. Careful, you have to backtrack there now.
Then it was consistently raining, but not torrential for Primal Scream.
Oh.
I was about to walk. We're about to walk away from that being, it's too much, right? And then just as we were walking away, I heard, what is it that you want to do? Which is the start of Loaded by Primal Scream. And it's like, well, I have to turn around and go back. And the rest of the gig was just unbelievable. For like the next half an hour, it was just banger after banger in the rain.
Yeah, but feel like Primal Scream, I feel like that just, the rain, I think, would just add to it. It's like, make it atmospheric.
Bobby Gillespie was loving the precipitation. He was all about it, yeah. He was embracing it as it was. But no, we got very lucky with the weather. It was warm as well, flat roasting. So it was good for the
short. No, we definitely weren't roasting. We were like sticky in Galway. It was like that. Do you know, like, you're just sticky.
The worst.
All day long.
Warm and wet is the worst. But what a box office bank holiday. I would say pound for pound, it's the most box office bank holiday we have, the August one. There's something happening everywhere you look.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, I did have a bit of FOMO now when I saw everyone at All Together Now, but I just can't ever leave Galway because it's the races for me. So that's just my August bank holiday year on year will never change. So I never get to experience anything else. But I did like watching everyone's social media content and I thought, All Together Now did look pretty cool. I actually was like, is anyone anywhere but All Together Now? Like, everyone seemed to be there.
Well, if they were there, they told you about it. That's, everyone knew you were at All Together Now. How were the races? Well, they were busy as well, according to your own social media.
Yeah, so I went socially on Monday,
all right,
which is the opening day, which is probably my favourite day for the Galway races because I find it's very like the Galway day. It's like all the locals come in and it's really, really good and the weather was lovely. And if you're familiar with the Galway races, you might know the Long Bar. It's basically a really long bar. That's literally what it is. So I brought my friend from Limerick down. And I said, well, we'll come down here and see who's down there. And I'd say after finish, she was like, how do you know so many people down here? And I was like, this is because this is literally South Galway. I said, everyone from that I grew up with, that I went to school with, neighbours, friends, they were in the Long Bar. So it took us a long time to get through the Long Bar. And then I went, watched on television the next few days. And then I was working on Friday and Saturday for TG Car. So RT do the coverage from Monday to Thursday. And then TG Car take over Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
And then Sunday, nobody does it. Well, Racing TV, I think we're there Sunday.
Were you broadcasting Oscailge?
Oscailge?
No way.
Yeah, Rossi Pio, we're teaching care.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
Wow.
Now, the only thing I will say, because our analyst...
I think she was doing a teaching care.
I know, I thought they might have brought an English person. I think they're speaking first.
Well, like, to be fair, a lot of my interviews would be in English because I would be interviewing owners and trainers and jockeys. A lot of them don't have Irish.
There
so.
You go.
But like, I do my introduction, Oscailge, so... You'd kind of, and I'd kind of throw in the odd Irish word throughout my interview, not to throw off the interviewee, but
yeah.
So at home, you'd kind of get the
just the flex of it.
the bilingual. Yeah. So, but you know what? Everyone loved it because people often said, you know, they found they tune in, and then because you're getting the bit of English, those who don't speak Irish could watch it and could like feel like they're a part of it.
All right. So sorry, could you do all the show in Irish?
Well, we
if
could,
it came to
could
it.
Go, yeah. Wow. No,
I'm not asking. I'm definitely not asking. But that's very impressive.
We could. Well, there's actually quite a few Gaelgors around. We'd be surprised how many sports there's a lot of Gaelgors in. So, like for the time I covered this Women's Six Nations for Off the Ball, I did a lovely Agalov interview Os Gaelge with one of the players' parents because they're from the Waterford Gaeltacht, and TG Cahir actually came to a few of the pressers. So they were doing a few of the interviews off scale. Yes, they're bringing in the Irish speakers. So there's definitely, and of course the GA players, there's loads of speakers out there as well.
Galwegians have a great relationship with our native language, I find in general. The Galway commentator for LOI TV, whenever Galway United score breaks into a bit of Irish.
I love it. I think it's really poetic and fun to listen to. Well, see, I lived in Spittal for 5 years.
Yeah.
So we were immersed in it. So we were plucked out of Dublin and dropped into Spittal. And sure, I remember the first weeks in school, it was like I was getting in trouble because I was speaking English. And I remember like, I don't know. And but you're like within weeks, we were like fluent because you just no choice. And then we got plucked out of there and brought into it back to another English speaking school. So it was interesting. But yeah, the Irish has served me very well.
We were at a tent at All Together Now, Goal Out tent.
What's your staying circumstance? Sorry, you were staying like you are
right
you,
now.
No. Are you in just the general population? Are you in a boxed off area?
We were in terms of where I put my head down or where I hung out largely. No, we all stayed off campus for people working there. But you had a choice. You could do what you want really because there were some of our colleagues stayed on site and camped.
Oh,
yeah. There was a bit of variety there.
Okay.
Some people that you know very well actually.
Glamped or camped? It's a big difference.
I'd have to ask them down the lens if you camped or glamped. But I think you see it. I think you see it. I don't think there was any G's. I think these are hardcore people. Yeah, I think they were camping straight out.
Wow. Did you have a real bed?
Like Jojo was just talking to you in my ear about something. What are you saying to me?
Oh, so you are in a hotel.
Yeah, we were in a hotel.
Sorry.
We were in a hotel in Waterford. We got a bus back one night. We got a taxi back the other night. Do you know how much taxis are? They're absolutely insane.
I don't know where.
It's in Port Law, right? It's in Port Law.
Yeah.
And then went back into Waterford. But that's about a half an hour. But it was insane. They were just making up prices, whatever they wanted. Like they had a captive audience and they made sure it was captive. And it was iconic the next morning. Like people were coming out with all sorts of figures about how much they were charged. And you'd almost be bragging about the highest one. Like some people were quoting three figures. To get from Port Law to Waterford.
Do you know what though? I'm one of those people because if I want to get home, I want to get home now and I will pay the price. Like when I was at the Lions tour in Dunedin in, God, was that 2017? Trying to get back out to where I was staying was just outside Dunedin. But it was too far to walk and it was winter, so freezing. And I was walking up the street and I was like, how can we not get a taxi? And anyone that's been to Dunedin will tell you they're really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. So I just went out and started flagging down cars and I flagged down this truck, these two young lads, and I said, any chance? Said, I'll pay you. And they were like, yeah, okay. So I dropped them back and all I had was 50. So I was like, here.
Bloody hell.
And I said to them, I said, now what you do? I said, you get back into that back into Dunedin. And they said, and you do this for the night. I was like, you're going to make loads of money. I was like, loads of people need lifts. I was like, give people lifts. And he was like, okay. And off you went.
Jesus, that was some risk. That could have been a future Netflix documentary.
I know, I shouldn't be saying this. I know my mother's probably listening, but this happened to me more than once. I've done that more than once. So when I want to get home, that is it. I'm like...
Yeah, no, I get you. Yeah, you get tunnel focused at that point of the night. Yeah.
I will do anything to get home, obviously, and I'll flag someone down, or if I can walk it, I'll walk it.
Yeah. Lola, let us know in the comments there if you were at All Together Now. We did our first ever festival. You had to be there for the show that we've been doing
Brian
for 3 years. Yeah, Brian Kerr.
Yeah, I saw
Brian Kerr did his episode. It was amazing. It was an hour, didn't do him justice, really. We had to leave a few behind, like his father fought. Father was a brilliant boxer, Brian Kerr's dad. He co-founded a boxing club in Drimna. So Michael Carruth, who won Ireland's first boxing gold, trained there and all that. And his dad fought Mussolini's son-in-law. And you can imagine the result of that. So that was never going to work out. But that was one of his entries. And his overall, You Have to Be There was so good that we didn't get to that one.
Oh,
that's how varied his All Together Now or his You Had to Be There was at All Together Now. But Brian Kerr is a man of many interests because while he was working with us and did that and then did a League of Ireland slot the next day with Nathan, he was off at all the gigs that he could get to. Mad into his music.
Love it.
Brian Kerr loves his music. adores it. And him walking around on site, and bear in mind, like, it was like this time 20 years ago, the guy wouldn't have been able to move because he was still the Ireland manager. But it still was difficult for him to get from place to place. Like, people were pulling him left and right to call over. And when we were chatting with him for, you had to be there, you're walking by the tent and you could see people like, oh, geez, Brian Kerr. And they'd stop and walk in. And that's the cool thing about the festival. It's like people just coming and going all the time.
Yeah.
Popping their head in and chatting away. But
I
there was some
people actually in tent as well.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Beanbags, hadn't she?
Beanbags, yeah. Which I was like, that's not going to work out. People are getting way too relaxed there. But then like people sit up in the beanbag. It was the whole thing. And then Tommy Walsh was on yesterday. Michael Darren McCauley. And everyone was just in great form, basically. It was very much a festival vibe with an actual bit of a serious conversation at times as well. And we had a crappy quiz then on Friday night. And myself and Nathan got to the tiebreaker. And it was decided with a race where we each got to decide who would race on our behalf from the audience. And I chose someone. And I was going to tell you about this, but you told me about it first. Because you know this person.
I do. Shout out to Charlotte. Charlotte and I played tag rugby together in Limerick. And she is a speed merchant. So I was absolutely... I saw her... First of all, I saw the video because I saw it through my friend's Instagram. They were all there. And I could see Charlotte sprinting down past the tent.
Yeah.
And I was going, what's going on here? And then it was when you... Then I found out it was because for the crappy quiz. I thought it was brilliant.
I think she drew. To be honest.
I think she drew.
Right? No, but like it should have been a draw, but it was awarded for her opponent, who was Nathan's representative.
Okay.
But I'm fairly certain to this day that she drew that race.
I have asked for video footage.
Yeah, so because
it was
on everyone's stories, but couldn't see it. So
we'll get this sorted.
For people who weren't there, we basically did a 100-meter sprint to decide who's going to win the quiz. And
it was like a gravel track. It wasn't even like...
Yeah, that was like the dirt track. And it was like kind of slightly uphill as well. Yeah. For some reason, we got them race uphill. And then we weren't too happy with that, so it was decided with a second tiebreaker round, which was guess how many caps John O'Shea has for Ireland, given where we were. And again, we had two representatives. I'd forgotten, right, that I'd written this piece about John O'Shea a few years ago. I went deep into all this stuff and completely forgotten all of the information I got in him. I was way under.
It's 105, 120?
Yeah. My representative said 73, and I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
I think that's Roy Keane, isn't it?
Sounds about right. Yeah, he's 60-odd, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Way, way fewer than you think. So, lost it on that, but got to the tiebreaker. It got fairly competitive.
It looked like it. Do you know what? I hate, though, when you say that, I hate when you do like an in-depth research on something and then suddenly afterwards someone asks you a question. It's like you're just...
It's gone.
All
it's gone
goes
from the head.
You're like, what? Who?
I was very confident when my guy, who was called Richie, said 73. I was like, that sounds right. He said it so confidently. He sold me into it.
Yeah,
you know?
But see, confidence is you do anything confidently. It's
a great lesson in life. Michael's been in touch there. ATN was drowning in notions. It's a fair way to put it. It kind of was. But there's literally something to do for everyone at All Together now. So I was working on the Friday, and then for the rest of it, I still go back to go out tent and all that. But essentially, you're just there.
Pop that in.
I'd love to know. Like,
how are you?
You're all gone.
It was only really on the Saturday night onwards that I started going to all the gigs.
Oh yeah.
But Megan, we went down there, was it, what day are we now? Tuesday. Sunday went down in the afternoon when it was low key and went down beyond the goal out tent. So again, this won't mean much to people who aren't at it, but basically beyond the tent is where the actual house is, where Lord Waterford lives and all that.
Oh yeah.
The actual big house is there. But if you went down there and turned right, there was a yoga class on.
Oh.
And the yoga class is about 50 yards away from the madness above. And then this is where the notions comic comes in. There was a restaurant there that you could do a tasting menu.
I saw this.
At a festival. And it was €55 a head.
That's not
but
bad.
Then if you went up this way, you get pizza and whatever you want. So there was a kids section. There was like spoken word thing. There was like a story time thing. There was a stand-up comedian tent, which caused sound consternation because there was a band right next to it. I sent on to someone did a cover of Bob Dylan, loads of Bob Dylan songs, and that sound was bleeding into the comedian's tent.
Oh sugar, okay.
And I always wonder how they
honestly
solved that.
I was like, I said to someone at the weekend, I was like, would you fancy organising a festival around the logistics of it? And they were like, I'd love it, it'd be fascinating. Like, like Megan, where do you put the toilets?
Wait,
where's
so
the best place to put the toilets?
But this is my thing. Like,
where do you put the stage versus another stage?
He was saying there about the notions thing. I think like I actually bumped into a friend at the Galway races who I hadn't seen since probably Oxygen 2008, because he went to Australia for years, and it was 2007. Sorry, I went 2006 and 2007, And he, I remember the rain was so bad and the muck was just like, it was just like, well, like there in Punchestown. And he, at one stage, I think I had got a bit of muck on my hand and I kind of went, boop, like literally a dot. And next thing he caught me and he threw me upside down and flung me into the gutter. Lost my phone, like everything was gone. Jeez. And then we were all just covered in muck and we were like, nah, we're covered in muck now. But like oxygen was rough out and it was just... Like, I don't even know, like showers definitely. Well, apparently there were showers there, but we never found them. And like, it was just so like, and then you look at like festivals nowadays and everyone just looks beautiful every single day. Like oxygen, I used to have this rule of like, we take our photos on day one. I know when we arrived, when the tents were pitched, but after then phones, cameras, we probably didn't have actually camera phones back then. All the cameras went away and it was just like, the state of us going home. Like my mother one time wouldn't let me into the house. She literally was like, do not come into this house. And she handed out a towel. She said, strip out there and then you can come in to the shower. So I just like change outside the back door, put on a towel and go into the shower. And then she just caught my bag full of my gear and just all straight into the bin.
It's the mad psyche of human nature that people pay massive money for this torture. Because if you look around to it in a different mindset, it's like a prisoner camp. Everyone's just like stranded out in like tents.
It was like,
and the difference of people from Friday night to Sunday night was amazing. Friday night was the best of everyone, like full energy, match fit.
Lovely
good to go.
Hair.
By Sunday, you know, people wanted to be taken off, like wanted to be subbed, but they had to keep going. They had to keep playing through it.
Yeah, I don't know. Last time I say I know I'm slagging you about staying in a hotel, but like my friend now lives in Portlaoise, and for EP, she was like, "Do you want to go to EP this year?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, because I'm staying in your house, so like it's the option of a shower, a bed, and somewhere cozy." But I'm like, I just can't do the tents anymore.
I have no problem. I'm like totally owning where I stayed. It was amazing. It was unbelievable. We've done camping before. We're here now, so. I was happy out. Let us know what you did this bank holiday weekend. I saw Bob Villain.
Oh, yeah.
Power.
Class.
Oh, my God. It was insane.
Yeah,
absolutely
really good.
Insane. So they were looking at each other, the two Bobs, him and his drummer, and they were like, will we say the line? And they were really close to saying the line, and they decided against it, but the crowd was going mental. Like... It's an unbelievable performance. Right before him was Bob Geldof, who was class. But Bob Villain, they got moved to this tent. They were supposed to play the main stage.
Yeah.
And they got moved to this because of all the controversy after Glastonbury. And he was right on the verge of saying the big line that got him in big trouble.
Yeah.
And he didn't, but he said everything else about it. It was incredible. It was incredible.
Yeah, I saw a lot of coverage as well from Bob Villain and Bob Dylan, or Bob Geldof.
Yeah, I know. It was sensational. Let us know where you were. 0879 180 180, or get on to us on YouTube. There was, of course, Fair Degree of Sport happening at the weekend. The Lions couldn't quite get the job done. Lightning strike. I mean, imagine how much you'd be raging from the Lions. Like, presume a lot of those players want to get home at that point, and you have to wait another 38 minutes before you can resume the game to play the last 40 minutes of a match they ultimately lose.
I just couldn't get over the weather. Like, I shared a picture from their training, said, oh, I didn't realise the Lions were training in Galway. And someone actually messaged me and said, oh, for a second, I had to look and double take. And I was like, yeah, because the rain was like, west of Ireland rain. And yeah, the lightning strike. And then I was at the races that day covering the racing, and they actually had it up on the big screen but no sound. So we were all kind of there, and actually I had some friends text me updates, you know, giving me the updates and the lightning strike. So I was there kind of between races going, what is going on? And it was just sounded like, it just sounded like it kind of had all the theatrics and the drama. And then I was getting a lot of social media coverage from people who were in the stands, like Irish people. And I was like, this is just, yeah. And it kind of felt like the Lions were a bit like, yeah, we're done. As you said, we're ready to go home. Like a lot of them, I'd say, must be so homesick. I think it's been 8 weeks, is it, in total? Yeah. They've been in the camp. And like, that's a long time away from your family, your like wives, girlfriends, babies. Like, I just imagine.
Speaking of, Bundy Aki's wife.
This is now the story of the Lions. So he let that slip, I think, at a press conference.
What happened here, Megan?
So his wife, Kayla, was actually in New Zealand with him because he's obviously from there. So they are back visiting family, and due his fifth child. And he said he knew that the baby was actually gone past its due date. And it was the day of the Brisbane match, and she rang. And this is all in the online and everything. All the journalists got time with him. And he actually apparently looked at one stage. He's like, have I got, because they were all going, what? Tell us more. And then he was like, have I got time? And they were like, yeah, go on. And so basically she called to say, I'm going to have to get to the hospital because I think maybe something could be happening, but I'm not sure. So he's like, okay, this is all the day of the Brisbane game. And then suddenly she was like, I think half an hour from the hospital. And she was kind of just going in herself thinking maybe this could be happening. And then I think half an hour later he gets a video call and there's a baby in her arms in the back of a car.
Insane.
Amazing.
And he came on in that first test.
He came on. So like this was all going on in the background and they called her Anya.
Oh,
lovely.
Nice.
Because obviously they live in Galway. Like we'd see Bundy around Galway the whole time and the family. So Yeah, it was. It's lovely for them. It's just, I think it's such an amazing story because this is what's going on. And you kind of forget sometimes that these guys all have families. Like Andrew Porter, I think his baby was only born not long before he flew out. So, you know, it's a hard time for them all. So Bundy was saying, like, he can't wait to spend time with his family. And he's like, and to meet my new daughter, because he was like, I've only seen her on video camera. But he said, no, everything was great. Everything's healthy. Everything's fine. But remarkable story because, you know, like to have a baby in the car on the way to the hospital, day of the Lions match. So all go for the Aki family. But I'd say they're just all so excited now for the break and the just to spend time with their family.
Definitely. And elsewhere, Dublin won the All-Ireland against Meath. Regained it, having last won it in 2023. It's the first time they've won it when the men didn't win it since 2010.
Yeah. They're saying, I was listening to some interviews and they were just saying, I suppose it's so exciting now for them because they'll kind of get all the limelight for it.
Yeah.
And well deserved. Like they were phenomenal on the day. And Meath, just nothing seemed to go in their way. And it just all.
In the score from playing the first half, Meath.
Yeah, it was a hard watch now. And like just getting some of those wides that shouldn't have been wide. And it kind of, you felt for Meath because you're like, come on, because we know what they can do. And we know what they've got powerhouse in Vicky Wall and Emma Duggan and everything. So you're kind of going, right, it's going to kickstart. But Dublin just came out with this ferociousness and they just were. Like even just listen to some of the interviews on Off the Ball yesterday, like even they said themselves, they went out there with the plan and they absolutely went for it. And the support there as well on the day, you could just see it. And they just were, I just was like, me just were not getting a break. Mm. And you're kind of saying, right, come on now, just let the like. And then I thought, I kind of wondered at halftime, I was like, will Dublin maybe tire a bit that Meath will kind of be able to kind of come back out with this new kind of energy? But no, Dublin were just, they were there to, they knew exactly what they wanted and they did the job.
And you were mad into the cricket there, Arthur. Mohammad Siraj.
Big time.
India, England.
What a conclusion.
What happened here?
I don't know enough of the ins and outs to tell you, break down what happened.
Someone scored a goal.
It was just incredibly dramatic. You know how these go, like that it's a series based or like five games or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was the 25th day of play or some semblance of thing. Like not in a row, obviously. It's spread out over a good few weeks. And it came down. It should have finished the night before, but it got, did it get rainy or too dark or something? So they had to postpone it for the following day to finish it on the 5th. And the basic thing, so England were batting and they had to chase whatever. There was a low enough tally to get past and win the series. They were 2-1 up. One of the tests had been drawn and India had to obviously bowl them out. And that's it. And it would draw a series. But this thing went into supernova. It was unbelievable. So straight out, there was like, they came out in the thing chasing about 30. They were 30 odd to score. So it's doable, eminently doable. And about 4 wickets left. But then I think England get like 8 off the first 2 balls. You're like, this is going to be a formality. And boom, wickets start falling all over the place. Unbelievable drama. But it's amazing. Like, I don't know all the intricacies, all the details.
Yeah.
Apparently afterwards, like England probably rushed it. I think was the general consensus. There's probably no need to play the way they were playing. Whatever is probably thrown away.
England had to chase 35.
Yeah, which is not insurmountable. Mm. But like, all in all, I think they're probably more disappointed. But one of the craziest things watching it was England's, must have been the 11th man out to bat, Chris Wokes.
Mm.
He dislocated his shoulder, I think, earlier in the week. Now, I don't know exactly the ins and outs of the rules, but you can't sub a starter off, so he has to finish. I presume maybe it can go down to 10, like if someone physically can't play and maybe you just lose one of your wickets or whatever. But no, so he comes out at the end.
Okay.
One arm in underneath.
Stop it.
In a sling underneath.
Away from him.
And it was his leading arm. So he's out there with the wrong arm.
Yeah.
One arm with the bat. And what I didn't realise, I was like, oh, so he's going to have to face someone here. But they kind of finagle it in such a way that he'll never actually end up facing a bowler.
Mm-hmm.
But what he does end up having to do is run back and forth when needs be.
Right.
And the man is in such agony. It's like, because you're just, imagine trying to run with a dislocated shoulder. Like, it's absolute, it's crazy stuff.
I'm getting pains even thinking about it.
He looked every inch of it. Like, it wasn't as if he was kind of carrying this off. But then in your med, Mohammad Siraj,
right? He bowls him out with the sweetest sound ever.
It's amazing.
When it bang. And then there's the and then the umpire puts his slow finger up. Like, it's just pure drama, you know. For a sport that's often criticized for being the total opposite of pure drama. Like, there's someone here in the comments, Mike's like, I've never heard of this Mike guy in my life, and he comes in, Christ, cricket, go back to all together now. I'm like, no, Mike, you gotta watch this back. Like, this is pure drama, the sound of it. It could be the greatest sound in sport of a bowler getting someone out in cricket, the way it hits the wickets and that stump hits, right? And then you're, it's like you're asking your dad for permission, like, is that allowed? And then the umpire is like, sometimes he just goes,
well, yeah.
And then sometimes the hand up, and it's just beautiful, especially if there's no ambiguity in that sense of it.
It's just amazing that it's like middle of the day on a Monday morning, and it's like on a Monday, and it's like it's not a bank holiday there. So you had all these people coming out, like, and they're like such an immense, I don't know how many travelling, I suppose there just would be a huge expat community of Indian fans in England anyway. So like it's a 50-50. It's not like it's an overwhelming English crowd. Like it's a proper atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
And the tension is just ratcheted up so high because you're like, it's funny. Like I was watching it on the Sunday evening and you know, they do those kind of score predictor things like of, oh, what's the most likely result from here on out? And it added up with something preposterous, like England at like nearly 90% certainty they're going to win this from this position.
Right.
So if you, and I don't know how much, like the commentators kind of like, not so sure about that. But like statistically, obviously that was the likelihood that they would win. And then for it just to sort of all start coming apart. And it was, oh, Jesus Christ, it was amazing. It was just like, you know, it's like, granted, I'm only catching the end of it. I'm not sitting through the other 25 days. But they were, like everyone was saying, to be fair, afterwards, they were like, is this the best series since the Ashes in 05?
Oh.
Which is kind of held up as, I think it was one of the last free-to-air ones as well. So that was like one of the last, that was a, such a big, massive deal. So like if they're talking about it in those terms. But it's crazy as well at the end of it. Like it's, they were, one of the big talking points at the end was like, oh, we've got to keep Test cricket. You can't let it go. It's like, this is why you got to keep it. So obviously it's under immense pressure because it's not, it's a bit of a relic of an old, no more than the Lions. It's a bit of a relic of an old colonial age, but it's, it was amazing. Good
well,
God.
You've sold it really well to me.
Like it was just class. Like how, and yeah. It's hard to know because I don't know. I'd love to have someone sat there who knows all the ins and outs explaining it. But like, it's, it was so good that I watched the highlights back that evening on BBC. It's just like, you want kind of more of this.
That's interesting you mentioned highlights, Megan. I was on the England and Wales Cricket Board YouTube page watching highlights of this England-Italy game, right? After 8 hours, it had amassed nearly 10 million views, the highlights of this match.
Wow.
It's currently at 11 million.
I hope they have ads on that. Make a lot of...
Yeah, that would sort them for life. Yeah.
Fair play.
Early retirement.
Right, that's what needs to start. I'm starting a cricket channel.
But seriously, that sound, right, it might be my favourite sound in sport. What's yours?
Oh, horses galloping, in the racetrack. I just love, well, see, I have to do with horses. Like, I'm obviously the horse show kicks off tomorrow, and I'm so excited because all the lorries and horse boxes are arriving into Paul's Bridge yesterday. Sorry to my friend Sharon, because I kept looking at the horse box, and she's like, what are you looking at? And I was like, sorry, there's another horse box coming in. And like, so I was like, that's a lovely lorry. But I'm sorry, the sound of horses, like, whether it's, I know, it's so weird. I know it sounds crazy. I do. I love horse lorries. I get very excited by them. So just the sound of the galloping there when you're standing by the parade ring, especially in Galway, because the parade ring is just like so close, and just hear that thumping of all those horses flying past at that speed. That gives me the goosebumps.
Yeah, it's class. I love when the microphone picks up really well in football, a shot hitting the bar or post.
Oh,
and that clang.
Yeah.
A referee counting the score in snooker.
Yeah, that's up there.
That's yours, is it?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. You're right about the wicket one is great. Hearing that hit, just that crunch. There's loads, like, you know, like boxing, amazing, you know, kind of.
We're getting smashed in the face.
Yeah, there's something definitely about it.
Jesus, you're sick.
I like hurls, if they ever can properly catch up the clash of the ash, like, that's just, we don't really get that picked up too much in microphones.
No.
No, in off the bar in soccer is probably top for me, very closely followed by a wicket cricket. And a proper one.
Do you know what I really enjoy? Because it's kind of slightly more unique that it happens. The time is a little more elapsed. Is especially in hurling, if there's a shot from distance and the crowd, when one part of a crowd recognises it before because of the angle.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It starts going.
Yeah,
it starts,
yeah,
everywhere,
yeah,
else plays around because they're taking their cue. That's a very good one.
Yeah,
that's rare enough.
So often you're going by that to know if something's gone over or not.
Yeah,
hurling.
Just watching
by the crowd completely.
Yeah, I love it. You can just go, yeah. Or sometimes, like, I've been in games before where I've been kind of a bit distracted.
Yeah.
And I've just, like, the crowd started roaring and I've just started roaring too. And then it's like, why are you cheering for the opposition? I'm like, oh, sugar, oops.
Something else as well happened over the weekend was another sandbox game in Gaelic football. So Jim Gavin was actually in attendance here. And Kieran Kirk, the sports journalist for the Irish Independent or Irish Times, I should say, has written about this because he actually played in this game. So there were 4 points for a goal. And once you cross the halfway mark with the ball, you can't go back into your own half. And they were mixing up the rules constantly. So after 15 minutes, they stopped dead on a hooter. And then they changed the rules after that, that if you received a hand pass, you had to do a kick pass. So Ciarán talks about this in the article, yeah, about the chaos that ensued, particularly when that rule was introduced, right? So I hand pass it to you, Megan. You can't then hand pass it again. You have to kick pass it. And he said that the amount of turnovers was insane. There was nobody retaining possession. But he also described it as very enjoyable, the most enjoyable element of the game. The 4 point goal from Ciarán's version of events here sounded quite demoralizing, that it would kill you. You can see two goals, you've shipped eight. Like,
what are they trying to do though? Like, it's like they've already, so you've had an All Ireland final where we've had the biggest score ever.
Yeah.
Like, is it just going for more and more scores? Just get it higher and higher, and that's the kind of measure of success? I don't know. Like, I'm not.
I think it's still to combat the safety first approach that many players have.
But what, like, it is strange because, like, I don't know what the most popular game in the world is, football, right? And you have maybe what you have on average 2 or 3 scores a game. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
I guess football's
the most popular sport in the world probably because it's the easiest sport to play.
Yeah, but it's definitely the most watched. You know, it's the most,
I said most accessible, not the master. Yeah.
It's the most watched. It's the most, you know, it's the biggest industry going. I just don't know if you want Gaelic football like basketball. Like,
yeah, it is interesting what area they want to get to, because if they do want pure chaos, it sounded like from Ciarán's version of events here that's exactly what ensued.
Mm.
Now, I was at those games in October last year at Croke Park that weekend,
yeah,
when they introduced the rules, and I wouldn't have described it as chaotic at all. I would have described it as ridiculously high scoring but looking very similar to previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the weekend where Aidan O'Shea was lapping up the goals.
Lord,
and he said, like, oh, they got to get rid of the 4 points for a goal. That's way too much. And he was the fella who was benefiting from the most. Like, so it is interesting what they'll do with this. But I do like the idea of you can't go backwards again once you cross the halfway. You can't pass it back into your own area, which, according again to Ciarán's version of events, was getting breached regularly. The players kept on forgetting about that. And sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't penalised.
But then are we losing the essence of what the sport is?
Look, it's funny that we got to this place in the first place. I remember having Ciarán Joyce, or Pádraic Joyce, I should say, in here the morning of those rules last year in October. And I was like, how have we got to this point? As a Galway manager, like, how have we done this? And he was like, I think we just basically cancelled each other out and teams are afraid to lose. So it is amazing that the sport got to this place initially anyway. But something had to be done. And you could say the same in the women's game as well. And we'll talk to Ciara Chant about that, where there's just not enough physicality at all. And it's ridiculously hard to win the ball back. And it'll be interesting to see if they change their rules as well for next year. But I don't know where this will stop. But the FRC is not going to be around forever. In fact, it should be finishing up in the near future. And then from there, I guess they'll decide what to do. But there is still a really important Congress in October to decide what we're actually going to do with the game here and what we're going to keep from the year that was, which I think people largely agree was very successful.
Yeah,
but people might argue with the last three games of the championship that both semi-finals and the final were no great shakes. But overall, the game was a much better viewing spectacle. And I guess, look, they don't feel like they're finished yet. I'm very surprised that the 4 point goal was brought back into consideration. I thought that was going to be completely outlawed. But the idea that you can't have two consecutive hand passes, if that gets through for 2026, that could be carnage.
Yeah, just so many changes. I'm like, can we just, like, I personally just hate change in general. So I'm like, at the changes, I'm like, oh God. I know it just takes time to get used to and stuff. I just feel like, some of the changes that they did make this year, I think the 2-pointers have been like really exciting. But the only, for some teams, they worked really well and other teams, they haven't. But I don't know, can we not just like leave it as it is? Because I don't know, It's so part of our DNA, and why are we trying to complete? Like, I just think maybe leave it as.
I also don't want a game where like you're relying on people making mistakes.
Yeah,
I don't want like people going back in an open hit kick pass, and then it's like someone gets on there. Like it's not necessarily always the most interesting thing to watch a team steadily build up a move, but this kind of thing of almost like a permanent frenzy is not.
Yeah, you see. I think that point is very valid, right? That we were talking about our favourite noises in sport and all that, right? But I would say, like, one of the most hated aspects of sport for a lot of people, not for everyone, but for Gaelic football, is the retention of the ball via hand passing sideways and backwards. Can be, it's fair to say, quite mind-numbing to watch, especially if you have no horse in the race. Yeah. And I guess they're trying to combat that notion of insipid ball retention. But you could lose the essence of the skill of the sport, because it could be complete carnage then. And sure, Jesus, tried to name a team of the year next year when no one could keep hold of the ball for more than 4 seconds. You know, that would be the interesting aspect.
I didn't think I'm trying to watch it. I think I'd have to have like nearly like a notebook in front of me going, wait, now, what do they do there? Can we pause that? Like, go back there, take a look at that again. Like, even just in terms of like reffing the game and stuff, it's like, yeah, it just seems like a bit of a minefield. Actually, sorry, to go back to the sound.
We
never discussed the sound of the ball hitting the paddle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've got a game on.
All right. I've never heard this sound.
We're playing paddle, yeah, yeah. It's nice, yeah. It's a good, it's classy.
Okay.
It's competitive.
Yeah.
Is this one-on-one paddle now, or is paddle always 2-on-2?
We can do doubles.
It's always doubles. You can't play one-on-one.
Oh, can you not?
Can't.
Always playing one-on-one.
You'll never get the ball back.
I just must be very good.
No, you'll never get it back. You play one-on-one. Yeah. You broke the first rule of paddle. It has to be doubles. But it's a beautiful sound as well. Okay. It's beautiful. It's classy.
It's great.
Don't be mistaken for tennis now. Very, very different to tennis. Actually, probably more similar to cricket, if anything.
Denser.
Off the bat. Dense.
It's all about the outfit.
Like a fine wine, like, it's good.
You have a nice outfit on.
What do you mean? Like, what do you wear? Like, you're just wearing, he was just wearing shorts and t-shirt.
No, I wore like a dress.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. It was nice. Thought. It
like
was
a
nice.
Tennis dress.
Nice. Yeah, I know it was. It was, yeah. It's a huge part of any game, really, to be honest with you, Megan. Brian Kersey had to be there, by the way. I just have to plug this because it was amazing. We're going to have that out in podcast quite soon, I believe. So he had the 1966 World Cup he was at. It's a story about a scoreboard from England and Argentina. His under-20 side in the 1997 World Cup, they got to the semi-finals. They played Argentina, Brian Kerr's side that he managed in 97. That Argentina side contained Juan Román Riquelme, Lionel Scaloni, Pablo Aimar, and a couple of other huge names. And they only lost 1-0. And then the next year, they won the Euros under-16 and under-18. And the achievement was so significant that it made reading in the years in 1998. So we were chatting about that. And then he was the guy who brought Roy Keane back as Republic of Ireland senior manager. Yeah. So he goes into detail about how that conversation emerged. That clip is actually up on our socials already, so you'll catch that on our Instagram and TikTok. But his relationship with John Delaney and the FAI brass, fascinating, doesn't hold back.
In Waterford, not us.
In Waterford. And then he puts it to the ground. It's like, he's one of yours, isn't he? And then all the Waterford. Maybe.
He must have been no age in 66, was he?
I know, that's what I was trying to do.
He was, he looked it up, he's 13.
30?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, well.
Yeah, he's looking unbelievably well. And he's a festival man, I can tell you that for nothing.
It's nothing
to do with his age. That guy was down there till the death every night.
Do you know what? That's what I love to hear. I love him. Oh, that's like, why not?
He was unbelievable.
I actually think I met him that time when he had that underage team. Because I went to a game in Lansdowne Road when the seniors were playing Argentina. And afterwards, we met the team. And I think, because I remember my father being like, go up now and say hello to him. I was like, hello, Mr. My father made me go up to every single player and say, hello, Mr. Yeah. And he sent me over to Robbie Keane. And Robbie was just really young at the time. It was when he was just starting with the Ireland senior team. And he told me what to say. So I went over when he was like, I was only about 7 or 8. My little autograph book, a little book and pen going over. And I was like, excuse me, Mr. Robbie Keane, may I please have your autograph? And everyone just burst out laughing. And I was like, why is everyone laughing? And then he gave me the autograph. Mortified. But Frank Hare was there that day too. Because I remember meeting him and I was like,
he's still a national treasure. Everyone knows this guy. Yeah, and loves a festival.